Memphis's quarantine station with news, sports, information, and entertainment. This is 92.9. Now it's the 6 with the Jeff Calkins Show.
All right, joined now, as promised, by the great Tim McCarver, another one of the members of the Memphis Sports Hall of Fame, who joins us here on the Jeff Calkins Show. Also, by the way, a member of the Baseball Hall of Fame. Tim, how are you this fine morning?
I'm doing very well. Thanks, Jeff. Considering everything, of course.
Considering everything. So I last saw you at AutoZone Park for the Sports Hall of Fame induction, and it was really a fun affair. Now, you have been in many halls of fame. Do they still mean something to you, and did that still mean something to you?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes. Well, that one was different because it was the Hall of Fame of my hometown, and I've never forgotten Memphis. I've got my youngest brother, who lives there now. We see each other ever so sparingly. And not, you know, all the time. And I've got a lot of friends in Memphis and still visit there quite often. It's a special place to me.
One of the things that I did not realize was the great Bill Dance. Was he literally your classmate at Christian Brothers? Like, what a class that was. And I think he brought it up.
It was 1959 that we graduated together. I believe that's right. I mean, I could be off a year or two, but it's okay to be off a year or two. I don't worry about stuff like that anymore.
What did Tom Mix mean to your life and career growing up? What was?
Oh boy. Well, he meant quite a few things to a lot of us. Of course, he was the coach at Christian Brothers, and we had those really two excellent teams in 57 and 58. I'm so proud of those teams and still have pictures of them in my home. Buddy Sofker and Mike Fracchia and John Guidi and Ray Saliba and all the guys that were meaning so much to me growing up in Memphis. And, of course, the baseball outfit. We won the state a couple of years in a row. That was an extraordinary class. It really was.
Was it always clear to you that baseball would be your first love? Obviously, you played more than baseball. But was baseball always number one in your heart?
I think so, yeah. I love football. I love the contact and everything with football. And we had put it mildly, a very aggressive class and some extraordinary athletes in that class. It just came together. Bill Dance, of course, one of the great fishermen in the world. It's just so much fun to go back and think that you're a part of those guys, which we all are. And we took a lot of pride in those teams and classes that we had at the Brothers in those years.
So I don't know how much does one reflect? I guess at those moments you reflect. But then when you reflect on playing and broadcasting, you called 23 World Series and 20 All-Star games. I was doing it's an astonishing career you've had.
Thank you.
Are you more proud of the baseball, of the playing part or the broadcasting part, or do they merge together in a certain way?
No, there are certain things that never take the place of playing.
Right.
The locker room is a sacred it's a sacred room as far as we're concerned, particularly if you've been successful. And in many ways, you know, to not to have been successful because you know how important it is when things do come together. We won the World Series in 64, 67, and then lost to Detroit in 1968. It's still a tough pill to follow because we thought Bob Gibson was invincible. I talked to him 2 days ago and told him exactly that, as a matter of fact. That's the truth. I said, Bob, you have always been invincible to everybody who loved you, and you got a lot of people in that category. And he does.
It's interesting because I was going to ask you that very question, which is, you win in 64, you win in 67, you lose in 68 up 3-1. And which does people often say the losses stick more than the wins? Do you think more about 68 than 64 or 67?
That's a good question, and the answer is no. I think what we did in 64 and 67, I mean, we beat the Yankees, and then we beat the Red Sox. Up there, Gibson, of course, lost his first game and then won 7 in a row and would have won 8 in a row. Had we won in 68, but we couldn't score any runs off Lolich. Lolich deserved all the credit in the world. And a funny thing, I've told this story before, Jeff, but in August of that year, 1968, we were, of course, watching the American League and determining, of course, we had no control of it because interleague play wasn't in those days. But we were watching the standings and everything, and Roger Maris, in his wisdom, told us that of course, Roger spent all those years in the American League, and Roger told us that we would not have a problem with McLean. And Denny won 31 games that year, but he said that the guy who's going to give us trouble is Lolich. He can really pitch. And sure enough, he ends up winning 3 games.
Yeah. Is the question that you get asked more than any other, what was Bob Gibson like to catch? I mean, is that the single? I was literally going to ask you that, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, how many times in his career has he? Because he's just like a phenomenon. It's if you were going to say what was so and so like to catch. Probably Bob Gibson, more than any other pitcher that I can imagine, would be the, because he had such a fearsome aspect in addition to how good he was. So what was Bob like?
Right.
What was he like to catch?
He was very difficult in some ways in that his ball moved late, and when hitters were looking for a particular pitch, there was only 2 pitches to look for. And that was a slider or a fastball. But what exploded like no other was his fastball. He didn't know which way it was going. Bob has an unusual set of fingers, and I'll tell you why. His 2 middle fingers are the same length, and his pinky and index finger are the same length.
Really?
And I have said that's perhaps what caused that unusual movement, because he could put it on a dime. A lot of people talk about how fearsome he was. He certainly was that. He was a competitor. He'd knock you down. He would do all the things you had to do to the plate. But his control was remarkable, and not until 1966 was he getting the better end of that control. I mean, he could. I've said that, you know, at will, in 1968, that was the year of his 1.12 earned run average. Of course, by far the best ever. But he could put a ball in the space of about a ball and a half, particularly on the outside corner to right-handed batters, and that's an extraordinary feat. There were no radar guns in those days. So I don't know how fast he threw, but it was the illusion. If you say, well, he didn't throw any harder than the guys today, that might be right. But what made it faster was the fact that his movement was late, and no hitter likes a pitcher with late movement. And the reason for that is he can't adjust to a particular pitch. He's a fascinating example of conquest and invincibility. And he's told Bill White he's got a very serious cancer going on, been bedridden for 9 months. And he told Bill White, our former teammate, first baseman for the Cardinals, National League president, he told Bill, he said, Bill, I'm going to beat this thing. And right now, he was scheduled to come to the opener in St. Louis. I mean, I could talk all day about Bob.
I'm glad.
He's my buddy and one of my closest friends in life.
So you also, of course, famously caught Steve Carlton. While we're talking about great pitches, what made his slider his slider?
Learning it from Gibson. and that's the true story. We took a plane, Japan Airlines, in 1968, after the series, of course, and it was tough because guys wanted to go originally, but it was tough to go after we had lost to Detroit. But we went to Japan. We played 18 games in 33 days, and on the way over, I'll never forget the conversation. Steve went up to Bob, fully realizing that he could be traded at any time, and eventually was to the Phillies. And wanted to know, he said, Bob, I'm not going to get by with just a curveball. He said, it's too light. And I was there kind of as the middleman between the two great pitchers, two Hall of Famers. And so Bob said, sure, I'll show you how to grip it. He said, and Lefty not only found out how to grip it that night, but he was bound and determined to build up his arm so he wouldn't have elbow problems. The problem with Bob's style of slider, that Bob never had, by the way, was it was so damaging to the elbow. The Dodgers, for instance, never taught the slider in their minor leagues. And the reason for that, they were coming down with too many arm injuries. So Steve made himself the most powerful man I've ever met, from his fingertips to his elbow.
Really?
His elbow was not involved in pitching. It was simply the movement of the two fingers, the index finger and the middle finger, the movement through the ball, and he never had to twist his elbow to make the slider do what it did, and believe me, it was remarkable.
Anything, obviously different, very different people. What united Gibson and Carlton? What in what ways were they alike?
In no way.
I was going to go with competitiveness or something, Tim. Literally, in no way.
No, in no way. Lefty was. They were both fierce competitors.
Right.
Don't get me wrong.
Uh-huh.
But Steve was more or less reticent. He was very passive on the mound. When Gibson told the man, Steve has the utmost respect for Steve Carlton, and he has said that is Bob's office, and nobody enters his office unless they're invited, and very few were invited. I might add, I was one of those that wasn't invited. and we kid about it all the time. I said, Bob's one of my best friends, and he is, but he did not want anything to slow him down on the mound.
Interesting.
Nothing. Not a manager, not a catcher, not a shortstop. He said, he told me, very, very abrupt when he told me that, if put down whatever comes to your mind, if I don't like it, I'll shake you off. And he didn't, it got to the point where, we were in unison. He didn't shake me off anymore. Lefty, on the other hand, would shake off of the slider when he felt it. And I've said, and I think there's more than a ring of truth to it, that the two guys that were influential with Carlton's career were third baseman Mike Schmidt. Because if his slider was going to be hit fair down the third base line, the third baseman was going to come into play. And the third baseman happened to be the Hall of Famer, Mike Schmidt. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's okay.
That's a pretty good third baseman. And the first base umpire. Because the first base, Steve had more check swings of, I have no idea if this is true, But I would say more check swings that Carlson had than any pitcher in the history of the game. Now, I can't prove that, but the guys were so in doubt as to whether to swing the bat or not.
Interesting.
Because the slider broke late.
It sounds like Bob Gibson was practicing social distancing before it became fashionable there. Tim.
I've been thinking about that. I was thinking about our conversation today, and I don't know, for all those movie buffs out there, what movie, and I love movies, but what movie would you think that represents the situation in the world today?
You would have had to prep me for this one, Tim. I don't know. Did you hit upon an answer?
Okay. Well, my answer would be Papillon.
Sadly, didn't see it. I know the plot, though. It seems like it would work. I got time, so I'll watch. Have you watched it recently?
I have not. I've watched it perhaps 3 years ago or so. But it was great performances by Steve McQueen and Dustin Hoffman.
I got to go back and watch it.
And it was about loneliness and about solitary living. All of the things that were in that movie with McQueen and Hoffman, I thought, were just terrific and I've run it past a few friends.
I'm going to put it on my list. While I'm talking to you about some of the greats, you also, once you move to the booth, you work with Al Michaels, you work with Jack Buck, you work with Joe Buck, you work with Sean McDonough, many others.
Keith Jackson.
How about those? Like, what made the greats there? And who, like, immediately leaps to mind as the ultimate pro's pro?
Well, I worked for all four networks. I worked for ABC first. I worked the stands in 1984. I was a veritable utility man.
Well, and you replaced Howard in 85, didn't you?
I replaced Howard Cosell in 85, right?
Yeah.
Had 10 days to prepare for the
Because Howard did something controversial or something and got bounced from the series, and you...
He wrote a book, and he criticized Rune Arledge. Now, let me tell you this, in television at the time, there were a lot of guys who could criticize ABC executives. Nobody criticized Rune Arledge. Nobody.
And that's
how powerful he was.
Yeah.
And he seemed to think that I was going to be the next whomever, and I got the job, and Howard was in effect fired. And
right, the 85 World Series. Yeah,
you can imagine his feelings about me. After that happened.
All right, so
I can look back on it now and think how funny it was, but at the time it was. There was vitriol coming out of every orifice of Howard's body.
Would you run into him still after you would cross?
Yeah. Oh, of course. I lived in New York at the time.
Right.
And I would run into Howard all the time.
You're one of the few people who's done the Mets and the Yankees both, right? Didn't you?
Yes.
Yes. Very different cultures, yes. Even when you were there?
Oh, my gosh. As when George Steinbrenner hired me, after I was fired from the Mets, I was with them for 16 years and worked with Ralph Kiner, some of the great days that I ever had in baseball. But then I went to the we had a luncheon. Rupert Murdoch was there. We had Mickey Mantle's, and Joe Torre was there. Mickey was there. Mickey Mantle was there. And George Steinbrenner, and I remember one interview that George was giving. He said, "Now I want to be perfectly clear about this. This is not a Mets Yankees thing." we all had to laugh. I mean, because it was everything that the Mets and Yankees hated each other. They still do. But, nobody could hate like George.
Right. Of course, Hank passed away yesterday. I take it you knew Hank, too.
I saw that. Yeah, I didn't know Hank real well, but I know Hal. And He's a good man. He really is.
So in 96 World Series, Yankees win. Joe Torre's the manager. His brother, Frank Torre, has just gotten a heart replacement. And you, in celebration, you come up with this call. Frank Torre is on his second day of his new heart. Joe Torre is on his 56th year of his first one. Both are overflowing. That's a fantastic call. Did you come up with that in the moment or in advance? Do you remember?
I think the best lines on the air are when they're there someplace, and you don't know when they're going to come out. Right. I used to write things down, and it was okay. I mean, I remember doing the Toronto Blue Jays series against Atlanta in 92 with Sean McDonough, and Paul Molitor was having an extraordinary series, and he just got his fourth hit in Toronto. Crowd's going crazy and all that. And I said, I asked our truck to go to PM. The PM was on the scoreboard, and it stood for Prime Minister because the Prime Minister was there that night. And I said, PM are the two letters that mean so much in Canada, but they may change the meaning of it once Molitor's through with the World Series. I had no idea I said it. I just saw it the other day, and those are the best times when it just comes together like that.
Talking to Tim McCarver. We're going to wrap up here in just a second. But, Tim, obviously, we've talked all of this. We haven't talked about the state of baseball now. I take it you are ready to have it back. I don't know what you imagine, when you imagine it might come back. And how are you faring during this lockdown?
Well, I'm like everybody else, all the other Americans in the country, trying to find out what to do and how to busy myself and trying to stay healthy, particularly with the exercise. And I've been bothered by a bad hip, and I haven't been able to exercise, and that's really bothered me for the last couple of weeks. But, you know, things are, you get by, you try to do the things that are right, and let me tell you, we need leadership. We're getting some leadership. I'm not sure if it's enough. I would have to say that it wasn't enough. I think we can do better in that department from the men and women that govern us. And you know, you go from there and try to take care of yourself and respond when this thing's over. And it will be over. It will. I concur with the leaders in our country that we will lick this thing and go on to, I don't know if it'll be a better life. It'll certainly be a different life. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, this was such a pleasure, Tim. I really appreciate you making the time. Thank you very much, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
My pleasure too, Jeff.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. That is the great Tim McCarver. Didn't expect a movie recommendation as well, but we got a movie recommendation as well. Boy, that was a delight, wasn't it?
That I hung on every word.
Yeah. Just unbelievable. Fun to be talking about baseball. We got to take a break. We'll be back with the one story you've been waiting for. It's Jeff Crawford Show, 92.9 FM.
Jason and John guests appear on the ATC Fitness phone line. ATC Fitness. This is the Jason and John Show, presented by the Wing Guru, only on Memphis' sports station, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Gaskowski is a University of Memphis product, longtime New England Patriot who's now starting a new chapter in his football career. He joins us now. Hey, Gotti, what's going on, man? Thanks for the time.
You got it, guys. You got me out of being a fourth and first grade terrible homeschool teacher, so I appreciate it.
How's that going? I mean, obviously you have a lot more time now. I mean, might you pursue maybe a full-time career in education?
No, I think I'd probably get fired after the first week. I mean, it's fun getting to spend a lot of time with the kids, but I mean, trying to teach them things is very frustrating, and test your patience. And, you know, God bless the teachers who are having to deal with 20 to 30 of those little things at a time.
Yeah, so obviously a lot to get
no
to on the show here, Stephen. Let's just kind of start with, you know, what you're thinking right now as it relates to, you know, your professional career. You obviously are one of the all-time great NFL kickers. What's your mindset in terms of, you know, continuing your career? Where are you on that today?
Well, first of all, thank you for the compliment. And then, you know, I'm just working out, continuing the rehab process, trying to get in shape. And, I mean, that's something I'm really motivated to do just personally for, you know, the rest of my life. So, you know, I can, you know, be able to play golf and tennis and do all the things I like to do outside of football. But, I mean, I'm preparing to play for this season. I just have to wait around till all this craziness settles down and see what teams are interested. And, you know, I can't fly anywhere. You know, no one can fly anywhere or take a physical or anything like that. So there's no rush on trying to find a team, but I'm going to prepare as if I want to play. So, I mean, that's my mindset. And whatever happens, happens. I'm not overly concerned about it because there's so much other stuff going on right now.
Yep.
In the world. And just to, you know, to have a goal of working out for myself and for a chance to play is motivation. So just trying to find creative ways to do that at home and not being able to go to a gym and, you know, get rid of the kids for an hour is very complicated, but we're making it work.
I imagine, though, just somebody that's as an NFL fan on the outside looking in, and then as a fan of your career, having watched you, all of us here in Memphis have, though, and then, you know, being 36, us having watched, we know Matt Bryan, I mean, Phil Dawson, guys go into their, well into their 40s, they're still kicking. Do you feel like that interest level is still going to be pretty high when we do get to your point past all of this? That, I mean, I got to believe, Stephen, that it's going to be high, like there's going to be a bunch of teams interested.
Well, I mean, you'd like to think that. I don't want to assume anything. You know, there's usually a lot of turnover throughout the years, and a lot of guys do recycle that have played before. So we will see. I'm going to keep the options open and, you know, would be excited. I think a goal, I don't think I would want to play past 40. So,
gotcha.
I mean, I said that to 35, and here I am. But, you know, we'll see. It's got to be mutual on both ways. And I'd be excited for a fresh start and, you know, a new challenge and a new chapter. But I'm going to let, you know, time will tell. You got to be patient in these things. And when you're 36 coming off an injury, people aren't, you know, banging down your door. So it's one of those things, like, I'm going to have to be able to check in with teams, let them see where I'm at and, you know, garner some interest. And I think once the draft is over and the NFL, you know, guys who call the shots start looking to fill out the rest of their roster, it'll be a better time to kind of see who, what, where, when, and why, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we are, of course, talking to Stephen Gostkowski, longtime New England Patriots kicker, University of Memphis product. Obviously, what a tenure, right, with New England. I mean, three Super Bowl championships, it did end. But now that you've sort of had, you know, the last few weeks, I'm assuming, in this isolation, I don't know how much you're thinking about it, but in terms of what you can say, how do you look back on your time in New England? How do you reflect on it?
I mean, just like anything else, once something's over with, it's hard to even think about any of the negatives. All I remember is all the good things and all the, you know, crazy experiences that we had. I mean, we were pretty much the modern day Yankees. Since I was there, to be able to be a part of that and drafted to a team that had so much success and to play a small part in that was awesome. And, you know, you learn a lot from the wins, you learn a lot from the losses. And, I had kids young, and my oldest son got to go to the 5 Super Bowls. My other kids got to go to 3. I mean, it's pretty special, pretty crazy, you know, pretty stressful at times, but looking back at it, I wouldn't change anything. And most importantly, all the relationships and the coaches and teammates and stuff I had in New England and, you know, up here is the longest I've ever lived in a place. So it's been, you know, no real complaints over here. I got nothing but gratitude and love. So I'm just excited to be able to look back on it finally and not have any ill will or, you know, bridges that have been burned or anything like that. So it's all good on my side.
Yeah, I was reading Tom Brady say he doesn't care, you know, that the media and fans worry more about his legacy than he does. And you know, you read that and you take it for what it's worth. But I do imagine when you feel like you're still competing at a high level and you've got more in front of you, that you're not thinking about your legacy. You're just trying to put your best foot forward that next day. But I'd ask you the same question. I mean, Belichick called you one of the greatest kickers of all time. I think we certainly all feel that way. The stats back it up. You're third in NFL history in field goal percentage. Do you think about things like legacy, or is it like that? You're just thinking about the next team and the next stage of your career. I mean, do you consider yourself one of the greats?
I mean, I don't like to think like that. I played sports to have fun. If there was a ball, I always wanted to try to kick it, throw it, hit it, dribble it, run with it, do whatever I could. You know, you pick up anything that you can hit a ball with or catch a ball with, I'm down to try it and try to master it and perfect it. And that's kind of what gets my juices flowing. And kicking is one of those things that took me the farthest. It's a unique skill that not a lot of people can do or want to put the time and effort into to master it. I mean, you know, the first time I kicked a ball in ninth grade, I could kick a 55-yard field goal. But it took years and years and years to where, you know, every other kick wasn't a complete shank. So it takes a lot of time and effort. And I don't, you know, if you start getting wrapped up in legacy and what people think about you, those are just distractions that keep you from performing at a high level. You know, it's kind of like being a horse in a horse race. They put the blinders on. You just worry about the things that you can control. And the only thing I can control is how hard I try, how hard I work, and how I treat people along the way. And I feel like when my time with New England was done, I was very happy with that for the way that I felt like I was respected, you know, by my coaches and teammates and people reaching out and stuff like that. And I care more about that stuff and trying to be a good person and teammate than any stats or legacy. I mean, that, you know, Bill Belichick said all the time, stats are for losers. I mean, it's nice to have them and it's nice for people to brag on your behalf. But I personally just enjoy playing and competing. And, you know, when none of us are getting any younger, and the fact that I can even have a chance to compete at a high level is pretty cool. So that's kind of how I feel about it.
I don't think a lot of people realize, but only three players have appeared in more career playoff games than Stephen Gostkowski. They're Tom Brady, they're Adam Vinatieri, and Jerry Rice.
Good grief.
That's it. Those are the only three ahead of Stephen Gostkowski. And you did it with the same team. I mean, 14 seasons. Just take the Patriots part out of it. Kickers don't typically last that long with one team. I mean, you know the position. You know it. You mentioned it. There's turnover constantly. How did you do it? How were you able to stay with one franchise, one team, for as long as you did?
I mean, number one, it helps that we win. You know, a lot of things go overlooked when you win. You know, when you lose and you're a big part of the loss, then it's easy to get a finger pointed at you when you play a certain position. So number one, that helps. And to me, kicking is a lot like hitting in baseball. Like if everyone else is hitting around you, it's kind of contagious. So when your team's playing good and playing well and making plays, you feel like you want to be out there and making plays as well. And it's kind of, you know, one of those things where, you know, I didn't want to be the reason. I try to look on the positive side. Like I wanted to be the reason the team won. I didn't want to go out there to try to not miss, if that makes sense. Like being aggressive and having confidence and believing in yourself and having a lot of good teammates and coaches around you help out a ton too. I mean, there was some dysfunction, I guess, in New England with certain things, but it never got inside the locker room with the coaches and the teammates. And just being around professionals, learning how to be a pro, learning how to work hard, learning how to focus, learning how to get rid of all the distractions that can happen with media and fans and money and all those things. And having a family and having good roots and, you know, being humbled by things outside of football definitely help keep you having a level head and being able to perform.
Gotti, I got to ask you, I mean, you played with him so long. Did you know? I mean, did you know Brady was out of there? Were you on the out? You know, did you care at that point? I know everybody's got to worry about their own careers. And what do you think in terms of what he'll do for the Bucs? Did you Did you expect him to leave?
I mean, you see a lot, playing 14 years, you see a lot in this business, and nothing is surprising. And, Tom is, one of the best teammates, probably, one of the best teammates you could ever ask for, especially, how good he is, and he's the best of all time, and he's an even better person, and I'm just happy for him to have a chance to continue to play. It seemed like he wants to prove to people he can play at a high level, till he's 45 or whatever, which is remarkable, and that's his goal, and I'm excited for him. It'll be exciting to see him do something new and be recharged or energized, and I definitely wouldn't bet against him. But I mean, it's one of those things. It's not one of those things you guys talk about, like, oh, I'm going to go here.
Right.
Guys are very business-like. You focus on the next game, the next practice. It's very, militaristic. There's not a lot of like speculation and, Stephen A. Smith and, that kind of stuff. What if's going on? Maybe in the off season, but during the season, it's pretty business-like.
What do you think of all these Memphis guys, man, going in the draft? Miller, Henderson, Pollard. We think Gibson's going to go high this year. How about the University of Memphis and the talent it's pumping out here, the NFL talent?
It's awesome. I mean, I got to go to the Cotton Bowl, which, I mean, we lost, but it was unreal to be there and to have a team that, you can watch every week and be in the top 25 and have a champ.
Yeah.
And, them winning the conference championship was awesome. The guys that – it's a tight-knit group. I mean, there's not a ton of guys in Memphis in the NFL, and to have that list grow is going to be awesome. And hopefully it can attract more players to play, and hopefully, we can keep the train rolling with Coach Norvell leaving and keep being, one of those outside, powerhouses. And, I'm always rooting for all my Memphis guys. It's definitely very fun to watch when it's on TV. Especially the football and the basketball, it's really cool, and hopefully we'll get back to sports soon, and we'll see how good our team can be next year.
I'm gonna put you on the spot, Gotti. Who's doing your Hall of Fame introduction speech when you join Isaac Bruce in the Hall of Fame, brother?
Man, it's pretty tough for kickers to get in the Hall of Fame. So who knows? I'll probably have to play like 10 more years.
Stop.
I was happy enough to get in the Memphis Hall of Fame, and that was an honor enough right there.
Well, it's going to be some more. Yeah. Going to be some more.
Hey, Steven, man, we appreciate the time.
Thank
as
you,
always, man. Stay safe, and we look forward to seeing you on the football field this season, man. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. Go Tigers.
Yep. Yes, sir.
He is Steven Gaskowski, former University of Memphis kicker. Did you know that there was only three players who had appeared in more playoff games than Steven Gaskowski?
That's what I'm saying. No, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
That's you're not just talking about kickers. You're talking about players.
Yeah.
It's Brady. It's who?
Brady, Adam Vinatieri, and Jerry Rice.
I thought you said Rice.
Yeah.
My God.
And Jerry Rice only has one more appearance than Steven Gaskowski. So Steven Gaskowski could conceivably break that.
Well, he will once the Bears sign him, and we're the one seed.
He won't bring up with the Bears, so he's going to have to choose a different team.
Dude.
But he can definitely.
Yeah, there is no allegiance. I hope he goes back and listens. There's no allegiance to Eddie Pinheiro.
I don't think he's going to base his decision on your feelings about Eddie Pinheiro.
The question is, does he mind the Chicago wind? And the wind off the lake, it's a real deal.
I will say,
might not be ideal. He's kicked through everything.
I will give you a little bit of an inside scoop.
Oh no,
he did rule out, according to sources, the Vegas Raiders.
Yeah.
Don't miss the Jason and John Show tomorrow at 11 a.m. on 92.9 FM ESPN.